Several listeners have asked me how I could have kept going along with Alistair Glamis after he revealed a story that sounded so fake, so ridiculous, and so clearly fictional. I admit that I didn't believe him. Even after weeks of sitting in his cabin listening to his recordings while his father paced nervously outside, I didn't believe. How could I? So what was I doing there? I can only say that Alistair was the strange friend I needed at that moment of my life. And yes, I played along with his stories, right until it was too late to stop. After denying the past for so long that I could almost convince myself that it had never happened, that the murder was a fantasy, I woke up again to the truth. When Tom Allegost went missing and his desperate calls filled my voicemail inbox. Desperate calls from more than one man. Duplicate faces crying out like petals on a blooming flower. Only then did I know for sure that history was repeating itself. A secret history that spanned hundreds of years. This is the Disappearance Podcast. Episode 3, Eureka.
How does a record stop itself from skipping? It can't. One action in a world of infinite possibilities is duplicated in all its variations. Repeat and repeat and repeat in all its forms. It's the dragon with its many scales. The chain reaction that you and I cannot escape. If you move, then they move. It's a chess game that no one can win.
This was Alistair's cryptic reply to my questioning why his father was so very scared of him. I could tell. Their relationship was not well. The old man would leave whenever Alistair and I arrived. What we were doing surely would have looked innocent. The same scenario had no doubt played out in teenage bedrooms for generations. Kids sitting around a record player. Or a CD player, or a cell phone, listening to a mind-blowing recording. It really did feel that innocent. During that time, we might have been listening to Nirvana, a band named for the ethereal plane of enlightenment reached when a soul has gained enough wisdom to free itself. For Samuel Badeley's generation, perhaps it was The Doors, a band that takes its name from a quote by the poet William Blake. If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. For man has closed himself up, till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. Except, of course, it wasn't Nirvana, or The Doors we were listening to. Alistair Glamis was playing me recordings of his father.
So, you want me to explain what I found out?
Yes.
The expression, eureka, when someone discovers something that has been lost, it refers to an exclamation made by one of the leading scientists in classical antiquity, Archimedes.
That, of course, is my wife Carol. This bit was recorded only a day before Tom Allegost disappeared, 2 days before the calls started coming. I had been preparing to dedicate an episode of the project to some of the history that I knew all too well. I asked Carol if she would humor me in a bit of an experiment and find out what she could about the word eureka.
Eureka means I have found it. Archimedes exclaimed eureka after taking a bath and discovering the concept of water displacement.
And that's it?
Yeah. He lived over 2,000 years ago. You want more?
The truth was that I didn't care so much about Archimedes as someone else, closely attached to the word. Archimedes shielded Carol from my deeper source of interest. Someone who was no doubt lurking in the shadows of her online searches. Go ahead. Look up Eureka. Tell me what you find. It comforted me that my true target didn't come up so easily. I'll get to him in a moment. Tom's disappearance ultimately distracted both Carol and I from discussing Eureka further. In fact, Tom's fate ended my plans for the podcast entirely, at least at the time. Everything you hear from Carol from here on out was recorded before the point you heard during my last episode when Tom disappeared. To truly understand Eureka with regards to Alistair Glamis, I need to start with someone else. Someone who lived earlier. By all accounts, 18th century painter Sir Joshua Reynolds was born in Devon, England, in 1723. At a young age, he was very much engaged in the world of arts and letters, and he collected his thoughts in a commonplace book, a system of written reflection that is ironically not very common nowadays. A commonplace book wasn't exactly a journal or a diary. Those are chronological. A commonplace book was a non-linear collection of ideas, passages, and knowledge. Reynolds' own commonplace book contained extracts from Plutarch, Ovid, Shakespeare, and Milton, and passages on art theory, including some from Leonardo da Vinci. Reynolds' commonplace book served the same function as Alistair's recordings, the same function as Samuel Badeley's The Incredible Being, the same function as the Disappearance podcast itself. What he recorded in his commonplace book was his investigative path to his Eureka moment. What happened, and I am just going to say this directly, Sir Joshua Reynolds disappeared. He was gone for only a few days before another Joshua Reynolds from another place, a place just like his London of the 18th century, took his place, stepping into his life for his remaining years. Now, we can argue about how ridiculous that premise sounds, but at the moment, I need you to know what happened next. This incomprehensible migration occurred in the early 1760s, certainly before the year 1764. How can I pinpoint it so closely? Well, several artists and writers, friends of the painter, gentlemen of high society, began to act very strangely around that time. As early as 1761, Reynolds' good friend, William Chambers, a man who was making a living designing buildings for the nobility, went off the rails and designed a gigantic stone pineapple for John Murray, the 4th Earl of Dunmore, more commonly known as Lord Dunmore. 3 years later, the writer Samuel Johnson united some of the greatest minds of the liberal arts in a secret organization, a club, whose symbol happened to be the pineapple. 4 years later, Joshua Reynolds and William Chambers established the Royal Academy of Arts. And finally, 1 year after that, in 1769, Reynolds was knighted by George III. So, what was the catalyst that inspired these men? According to the recordings of Samuel Badeley, the secret club was meant to be a way station, an official welcome stop for strangers from other worlds to share lessons in some kind of utopian symposium. At that time, Reynolds became a title, or a marker for anyone not of our world. Reynolds referred to the double, the stranger, the other, and Johnson was a nickname or title for someone in the know. Someone tracking or even sometimes guiding those from other worlds. Have you ever come across the name Joshua Reynolds?
Josh Reynolds. Does he live in town?
How could I tell my wife that an 18th century utopian symposium was created over and over again in different ways by different versions of Samuel Johnson and Joshua Reynolds in different worlds? No, he lived a long time ago in England. He was a painter. I thought maybe you would have studied him in college.
Well, I might have.
That the secret club became overwhelmed with new versions of Reynolds crossing over.
So how does he fit into the disappearance of Alistair Glamis?
that H. Reynolds found a world that could turn a painter into the president of the Royal Academy, and ultimately a knight.
Do you want me to look him up? It might be fun going through my old textbooks. I am enjoying these little research missions.
That Reynolds became jealous and even violent with himself. And as the other members of the club witnessed these doppelganger rivalries play out, the utopian aspirations were lost in a deepening paranoia. The existential crisis of knowing that different versions of oneself lived and breathed just beyond a thin divide drove the men to madness. Meanwhile, Reynolds continued to cross over, over and over again, another and another. Soon, many versions of Joshua Reynolds ran around London, and the secret club existed only to contain them. How could I explain that to my wife? Instead, I said this.
That would be telling.
What a tease. What kind of podcast are you making? Apparently one full of secrets.
Of course, Carol was right. And not just secrets, but coded language. Samuel Johnson worked out a system that enabled different versions of Reynolds to communicate with himself when the need arose. He proposed a lodestone of sorts, a work of art that all the various versions of Joshua Reynolds, who were all presumably accomplished painters, might be attracted to. Reynolds could use the work to quickly determine how close they and their worlds were to each other, without dipping too deeply in ways that might further a paranoia or fear between the two. The lodestone decided upon was an elaborately detailed medieval altar painting called The Garden of Earthly Delights by Hieronymus Bosch. With the system established, all other communications, notebooks, and letters were burned. The symposium idea was deemed too dangerous, and many men who went by the name Joshua Reynolds were sent off to various British colonies to make new lives for themselves under assumed names. In a particularly dark fate, a great many of the men who were once called Joshua Reynolds were sent to their deaths in a skirmish led by John Murray. The battle was later referred to as Lord Dunmore's War. And that's it. Some of the men named Joshua Reynolds lived out the rest of their lives posing as other men. Others crossed over into yet other worlds, no doubt causing trouble for other men named Johnson and Reynolds. Years later, Reynolds' commonplace book, at least most of them, were lost, though at least one copy remained intact. And remnants of it began to appear coded within poems and short stories of an emerging American author. I can only guess that someone, somehow, picked up Reynolds' commonplace book from the battlefield of Lord Dunmore's War and passed it on, ultimately landing in the hands of the man I described as lurking in the shadows of online searches for the term Eureka. None other than the infamous Edgar Allan Poe. Poe himself did with this secret knowledge is a mystery, but his ultimate fate is known. History tells us that Poe died wearing another man's clothes. His last words, the repeated cries of a mysterious name not linked to any of his known associates. The name, of course, was significant only to a select few, privy to a 100-year-old secret. The mysterious name Poe cried out in his final throes of dying was, of course, not a name at all, but a title. a secret title for his other, his double, a doppelganger that may have even murdered him. As the darkness of mortality overtook him, Poe cried out, "Reynolds."
So, do I ever regret not following my dream of becoming an art museum curator? Huh. That's a heavy question. No, no regrets. I made some other choices. I'm happy with the path I chose. I mean, it led me to stay in New Hampshire. I married you.
You don't think you'd have stayed in New Hampshire if we hadn't gotten together?
No, I don't think so. But I'm glad I did.
Can you explain what you do now? Your job?
How is that going to fit into this show?
I might not use it, but I do want them to know you like I know you.
Okay. I work in art therapy. I help people, or at least I try to help people through art.
How can you help people through art?
Mostly I help people that can't deal with their emotions. So I help them deal, I guess. We confront the past together.
And what does that look like?
Basically, I do a lot of painting with my patients. We paint our emotions. I've done meditative singing, too. What else? I've done poetry therapy. I've done it all. I've even done therapeutic puppet making.
Puppet making? Like Kermit the Frog?
Yep, sort of. But the client makes a puppet of himself. It enables them to separate from themselves, and they talk through difficult topics through the puppet.
That sounds kind of silly.
It's not silly at all.
That's my wife Carol again in one of the early recordings I made of her back when Carol and I and Tom were still exploring the disappearance of Alistair Glamis. Back then, I would listen and re-listen to Alistair's vinyl records, but now... now I listen almost exclusively to the many recordings I made of her. Edgar Allan Poe's final major work was called Eureka. It was published 1 year before his death. He considered it his greatest work, and he is quoted as saying the book was more important than the discovery of gravity. This work was not a poem or a short story. It wasn't a novel either. Rather, it was a rambling lecture on the nature of the universe. The critical public called it confusing, disjointed, fake, and a general embarrassment of writing. Here's a quote from Eureka by Edgar Allan Poe, as read by my wife, Carol.
Space and duration are one. That the universe of stars might endure throughout an area at all commensurate with the grandeur of its component material proportions and with the high majesty of its spiritual purposes, it was necessary that the original atomic diffusion be made to so inconceivable an extent as to be only not infinite. It was required, in a word, that the stars should be gathered into visibility from invisible nebulosity, proceed from visibility to consolidation, and so grow gray in giving birth and death to unspeakably numerous and complex variations of vitalic development. It was required that the stars should do all this, should have time thoroughly to accomplish all these divine purposes during the period in which all things were effecting their return into unity, with a velocity accumulating in the inverse proportion of the squares of the distances at which lay the inevitable.
Poe really wrote all that. You can look it up. And if you think that's long-winded, then I must inform you that the complete work is over 40,000 words long. While his contemporaries considered it garbage, modern interpretations of Eureka pass it off as yet another example of Poe's long-time fascination with solving life's greatest obstacle, death. It is accepted as a reaction to the death of his wife, an expression of his grief. and the recordings that Alistair played for me in that small cabin, he shared that his father had a different interpretation of Eureka. He said that it was Poe's commonplace book, a manifesto that attempted to explain the existential discoveries he had found hidden in the history of arts and letters. Baddeley's own commonplace book was published as The Incredible Being, filled with the lessons Samuel Baddeley learned as he traveled around the world, tracing the situations and locations that enabled other people to pass their bodies through the chambers of infinite perspective. Something that he ultimately never accomplished himself. According to Baddeley, the list of travelers did not end with Reynolds and Poe. There were others, and each situation seemed to turn to tragedy. Some of those he referred to under the title Reynolds went mad. Many turned violent. Samuel Baddeley became terrified about what could happen to his son, Alistair. And he was convinced that there would be more. Another Alistair would surely cross over soon. And another. As for Alistair himself, he learned enough from his father that if he expected to survive, then he needed a secret club of his own. Or at the very least, a partner. A person he could trust no matter how diverse or strange the world he entered presented itself to be. That friend was me. Alistair and I were playing out roles passed down to us by history. He was Reynolds, I was Johnson. And if you haven't figured it out by now, then this whole project, months of releases culminating in my final confession, is, in a way, my own Eureka. Like Edgar Allan Poe before me, I'm calling out to you with my own commonplace book of sorts. While I call the project the Disappearance Podcast, I suppose the true meaning can only be understood if it were inverted, as if in a mirror. Instead of the disappearance, you can understand it as Eureka, as in, I have found it. And as each commonplace book has evolved in form and content, my offering does the same. I believe it is a thing that no one else has done before. I have traveled beyond the mirror, but I recorded the experience. In my next episode, you and I will take that journey together. Until next time, thank you to John and Danielle Herman for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Prom Queen, Ben von Wildenhaus, Ross Boyd, and Phil Kleiger for providing the music. This project is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Let's talk in 2 weeks. Partners in Crime Media.